Disappointment even greater than we've just experienced here. If you turn back to Luke chapter 23, if you've got a Bible with you or scroll back to it on your phone, we find in chapter 23, we find a man called Joseph from Arimathea who took Jesus' body, wrapped it up the way it should have been wrapped up for burial, and laid it in a tomb. The women came with him in verse 55, we're told. The women went with him. So they saw him place Jesus' body in the tomb. That was the Friday evening. And the following day was the Sabbath day, a Saturday, and being the Sabbath, they rested on that day, we're told. And then on Sunday morning at dawn, when the sun came up, the women grabbed the spices they prepared. They made their way to the tomb. I wonder if you saw that in our passage. They knew where the tomb was. They'd been there on Friday evening. They'd seen the body put into it on Friday evening. But when they got there to the tomb on the Sunday morning, they were surprised and confused. The passage used the word perplexed in verse 4. For they went in and they did not find Jesus' body. The tomb was empty. Jesus' body was not there. And we might be a little surprised and annoyed to find an Easter egg box, discover it's empty. But imagine those women going to the tomb on the Sunday morning, the tomb of a dear friend, and finding it as they did. They were perplexed. What on earth could have happened? Well, many people over the years have come up with various suggestions for what could have happened. Perhaps they made a mistake and went to the wrong tomb. Perhaps Jesus had not actually been dead after all. Perhaps he'd merely fainted on the cross. The Roman soldiers hadn't realized. His body had been taken down and buried, and then he revived inside the tomb. Perhaps his disciples had come to the tomb on Saturday, secretly taken the body away. Perhaps Herod or Pontius Pilate had ordered their men to come and take the body away, to steal it. People over the years have come up with all manner of ideas to try and explain how Jesus' body had disappeared. And I'm not going to go through each of them now and explain the flaws that they have. I think this morning we just simply need to focus on verse 5 and 6 of chapter 24. We're told two men in dazzling apparel, these are angels, they appear and give the real answer. They appeared to the women and said this, "Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, he is risen." Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, he is risen. And do you see the other thing that these men said to the women in verse 6? Remember how he told you while he was in Galilee that the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and on the third day rise again. The angels are saying, you shouldn't really be surprised about this. He told you about it beforehand. But I think we do find it surprising and hard to believe. A man who was dead became alive again. Jesus was dead. He was buried in a tomb with a massive stone rolled over the front. That was Friday. And then on Sunday, on the third day, the tomb was empty. He was gone. He is alive again. And I think it must be about the most astonishing thing and significant moment in history. There have been many strange things that have happened in history. In 1812, did you know, the Mississippi River flowed backwards. Geographers, that's really strange, isn't it? How on earth does that happen? There is an explanation, though. That it was a result of a massive earthquake, and it did not last for long. I wonder if you've heard the story of Laura Buxton. Laura Buxton wanted to find a new friend, and so one day she released a red balloon with her name and address attached to it. It floated off into the air, and then 10 days later, it landed 140 miles away in the garden of another girl, who was also called Laura Buxton. And the second Laura Buxton made contact with the first through the name and address attached to the balloon. The two girls discovered they were the same age. They were the same height. They had similar pets and hobbies. It was as though balloon had travelled from one Laura to her almost exact double. It's extraordinary. Things happen in our world, don't they, that are improbable. things happen that are really very hugely, extremely, massively unlikely. But a dead man who's been buried in a stone tomb, rising to life again, well, in human terms, that is simply impossible. Impossible. Which is why so many people refuse to accept it, why it's hard to believe. And there's a tangible sense of realism, I think, in these verses in Luke. It was not the women's first thought. They were surprised. They were perplexed, perhaps confused. What on earth was going on? And that's the point. This is a heavenly miracle, a miraculous moment, something not possible on earth. Why do you look for the living amongst the dead? He is risen. He is alive. It was promised beforehand. It has now happened. It is true. Jesus is alive. And that's wonderful. Hallelujah. And we're going to sing of that truth together. And this song that we're going to sing has little tasters sprinkled throughout of what the resurrection then means for us. See if you can spot them. We're going to pick them up in a moment. Do stand to sing if you're able. Because we're going to play a little game, and I'd like ideally two volunteers from team this side of the church. Okay, yep, come on up. Yes. Yes. Yeah, Toby, come on up. Okay, and then two volunteers. Yes. Yes, from this side of the church, please. We're going to play a little game. You can confer in your team this side, and team over here. Okay. I'm going to ask you some questions. You're representing everybody. They might want to shout some ideas to you. Now. We're going to play a little game that I've made up called How Do You Know It Is Finished? This is the game this morning. I think this is the first time this has ever been played in the world debut. We'll see if it makes it onto primetime TV in the near future. How do you know it's finished? Let me give you an example. I'm going to give you a question, and you've got to come up with your best answer to this. So how do you know you've climbed to the top of a mountain? How do you know you've finished the climb? What do you reckon? This is our example one. You can confer and check your answer if you want to first. How do you know you've got to the top of a mountain?
There's like a metal, how do I say it, altar type thing?
Okay, this sort of obelisk type.
It says like,
yeah, a trig point. Yeah, one of these sort of things at the top. Good idea.
You're above everything else.
Ah, you're on top of everything else. You can't see anything above you. There's nowhere further to climb. I like this. Okay, I would give the point here, I'm afraid, on that in that circumstance, because I think that's true. So that was our example one. Ready for the real ones? Okay, how do you know it's finished? How do you know a football match is finished? Confer quickly. 5, 4, time pressure adds to the game. 3, 2, 1. Okay.
Because the leader says it's finished.
The leader, the referee, says that it's finished. Final whistle blows. Okay, tie, 1-1. Good. Okay. Homemade cake is ready. How do you know it's finished? How do you know the cake is ready? 5, confer. 4. You can shout ideas if you want to help your team. 3, 2, 1. Go. How do you know it's finished?
Your mum says.
Your mum says? Okay, she says it's finished. I like that one. I hadn't thought of that one.
When you ice it, it's finished.
You ice it and it's done. Oh, it's an iced cake. Okay, anyone in the congregation want to come up with a different?
It tastes good.
It tastes good.
It smells,
yes.
Good.
It smells good. Yeah, like it. Okay.
You stick the knife in it.
There we go. Yes, you stick the knife and it comes out clean. Isn't that the test for a cake that's done? Yes. Okay. No points here this time. So I think we're 1-1. Are we 1-1? Yeah, 1-1. Great. Okay. You have finished eating your meal. How do you know it's finished? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Right. Let's go. Your plate is empty. Parents, you heard that. Good.
See, that's what we were doing.
Your plate is empty at 1 point each, I think. Any other ideas? Yeah.
You burp.
You burp. Okay, yes. Good. Yep. Anyone looking for a guest for lunch? Yep. Any other ideas? Yeah.
Only the greens are left
on the plate. Put your knife and fork together, maybe. Yeah. Lick the plate. Anyone thinking? No. Thinking that. Okay, you've finished eating your meal. Next one. You've finished writing a letter. How do you know it's finished? 5. Confer. 4, 3, 2, 1. How do we know?
Because you sign your name at the end.
You've signed your name.
You want to say the same thing.
Okay, you've signed your name. Good. A point each. Are we on 3 points each now? I'm losing track. Good. A school day is finished. How do you know the school day is finished? Confer. 5, 4, 3, 2, One. Go. How do you know? You're at home. You find yourself at home. Okay. The teacher says, get your bags. I'm going with a point this side. Okay, on that instance. So we're on 4-3. Time to claw it back. We've got a couple more. A film has... How do you know a film has come to an end? How do you know a film has come to an end? Not that you've run out of popcorn. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The credits are rolling. The same. Okay, we're now on 5-4. Good. A marathon runner, I think this is the last one. A marathon runner has won the race. How do you know that it's finished? Anyone had this experience? Anyone finished a marathon? Yes, Martin? No? Been at the finish line. Okay, so you can see, you can judge whether we get the right answer then. Okay. How do you know? You arrive at the finish line. You break the tape at the end. I like that. Okay, very good. Any other ways? You collapse on the floor? No. Okay, super. That's all my questions. Thank you very much. Well done. Grab your seats. How do you know it's finished? We're going to think about that question a little bit more in a second. We're going to have the second part of our reading. If you want to turn back to Luke chapter 24, and Elena is going to read the next bit from Luke 24 for us.
To a village named Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What is this conversation that you are holding with each other as you walk?" And they stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, named Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, a man who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things happened. Moreover, some women of our company amazed us. They were at the tomb early in the morning, and when they did not find his body, they came back saying that they had even seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, 'Oh, foolish ones, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself."
Thank you, Elena. Well, I wonder if you spotted the sense of despondency that was there for amongst Jesus' disciples following his death that we saw in that passage and those verses. Those two who are walking on the road to Emmaus, what did they say? They said, "Are you the only visitor to Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days? These things concerning Jesus of Nazareth. A man who was a mighty prophet, mighty indeed and word before God and all the people, how our chief priests and rulers delivered him up to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel." They had laid their hopes on Jesus. They had been excited for all that he was doing and all that he would achieve. Most of all, excited that he would be the one, as it says, to redeem Israel. That just perhaps he would be the promised Messiah, but he'd been crucified. And the very real sense pervading this conversation that we've just listened in on is that their hopes had been completely dashed and ruined. "We had hoped," they said, and now their hope, they thought, was gone. But did you see they'd misunderstood? Verse 25, Jesus said to them, O foolish ones, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. They had misunderstood. So the real situation is verse 26. It is necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory. The real situation is that Jesus is the Christ. For the Christ had to suffer like this. Jesus is the Redeemer. For the Redeemer had to die. He is the Messiah, for the Messiah had to enter his glory like this. And this is what the prophets had been saying all along. This is the fulfillment of all the prophecies. How do we know that the Christ's work, the Redeemer's work, the Messiah's work is finished? How do we know it's finished? Well, it finishes like this, in his death and then in his resurrection. And that validates it, proves, it certifies him as the Christ, the Redeemer, as the Messiah. I love the story of Ruth in the Old Testament. It's a wonderful picture of redemption. Ruth is a lady who has lost everything. Her husband had died. She had no children. She was a Moabite. All she had left was her mother-in-law, who was an Israelite. They were from different people groups, and Ruth found herself in a foreign land with no prospects. Her future was seemingly hopeless. She was quite literally scraping a living, picking up straw in the fields left behind by the harvesters. She had nothing really to offer, and things seemed hopeless. Until Boaz notices her. He is a distant relative. And under the laws of the time, he is able to redeem her. That means that he is able to pay a price that is due, and she can become his wife. And that's the picture of redemption, paying the price. What did the disciples say? We had hoped that Jesus was the Redeemer. But his resurrection shows that he is. The broad picture the Bible gives is that much like Ruth, we as people in this world are in a hopeless position. Does that resonate with your experience, I wonder? By nature, we turn our backs on God. We turn away from a relationship with him, and we say we'd rather rule our own lives ourselves in our own way. We say that we'd rather call the shots. And we look inside ourselves for meaning and purpose and identity and success, rather than look to him. And that means that we're in a hopeless position, because having turned ourselves away from him, he can't simply brush it all under the carpet and ignore it and welcome us back into his perfect heaven. That would not align with his innate character of fairness and justice. There's a price that has to be paid to bring us back to him. What did the disciples say? We had hoped that Jesus would be the Redeemer. What they had misunderstood was that his death was exactly that redeeming moment. He was paying the necessary price, and his resurrection confirms it. How do we know the price is paid? How do we know that we are redeemed? Because Jesus rose from the dead and confirmed it. And we celebrate that this morning. So I wonder if you, rather like the disciples, have those moments or those periods of despondency, of times of doubt, which could be for all kinds of reasons. Perhaps feeling as though it's just too difficult to believe it. Perhaps feeling as though we are just too sinful, too selfish. We are beyond redemption. Perhaps feeling that we don't fit neatly into God's family. We're too different to people around us. Perhaps that we don't deserve it. Why us and not others? Well, in those moments of doubt and despondency, do you need the words that Jesus, the words of Jesus spoken in love and tenderness? O foolish ones, how slow to believe. Look at the resurrection of Jesus. He is risen. So he is the Christ. He is the Messiah. He is the Redeemer. We can know that his death has redeemed us, however we feel. How do we know it's done and complete? We look at the resurrection. He is the Redeemer. And with that thought, we're going to stand again to sing his praises again. We're singing, "Thine be the glory, risen conquering Son." This song is full of certainty. Do stand if you're able, and we'll sing together. If we can get our next game, can you tell who this is? Can you tell who this is? Here's the first one. So it's a face morph. It's a blend between two people. Can you tell who they are? Who do you reckon? One's John. Anyone else agreeing? Is that John? Yes? Okay. Do we know who the other person is? Yes, it is. It's John and Wallace. Okay, well done, well done. Next one, can you tell who this is? It is, indeed. She's not here, I did ask her. She was very happy, actually, to be blended with Taylor Swift, she said. Rachel and Taylor Swift, very good. Who do you think this is? Who is this? Who is this? Yes, it is Javi and Legend from Gladiators. Okay, there we go. Can you tell who this is? It's Rachel Pierce, my wife, and Camilla. There we go. Okay. And how about this one? Who is this one? We're going for Bert and Fireman Sam. Okay, so, I know, wrong profession, apologies. Yeah, so, I don't know if you've noticed in our next reading, that we're going to have in a second, the two disciples encounter the risen Jesus on the road to Emmaus. And in this moment, they finally realize who he is. They realize who he is. Watch out for how they describe that time that they spent with him. And Annabelle, I think, is going to come up and read Luke 24, the next bit of Luke 24 for us.
So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he were going further, but they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is now far spent." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at table with them, he took the bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures?" And they rose that same hour and returned to Jerusalem. And they found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, "The Lord has risen indeed and has appeared to Simon." And they told what had happened on the road and how he was known to them in the breaking of the bread.
Super, thank you, Annabelle. Well, Jesus absolutely rose from the dead, didn't he? He is alive, and that gives his people, that gives Christians, that gives us certainty about our redemption. We can know for sure that he has paid the price to bring us back to him. But that is not all, for he is alive. And we get to live with him day by day in a very personal capacity. Did you see how those two disciples described that experience as they traveled with the risen Jesus, with the living Jesus? Look at what they said in verse 32. They said, "Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened the scriptures?" It is exciting to live day by day with the risen Jesus. I wonder who you want to spend time with. Well, on the 6th of May at Leatherhead Theatre, you could have an evening with Sir Bradley Wiggins. Would you prefer to spend the evening with Mozart, I wonder? With Nelson Mandela? David Attenborough, Walt Disney, Leonardo da Vinci. Who would you be most excited about spending time with? Well, verse 32, as those two disciples spent time with the risen and living Jesus, they described their hearts as burning within them. And if you are a Christian, then your relationship with Jesus is with a living person. If you're not a Christian and you're with us this morning, well, listen carefully. This could be exactly the kind of relationship that you know you need. See, he is alive. And so we don't simply live for him or live in light of him. We live with him. See, a person might live for the ideals that Mandela set out, mightn't they? They might live for them. A person might live in light of the teachings of Gandhi. But a Christian lives with the risen Jesus. As we go through the ups and downs of life, the greatest joys, those thrilling and exciting moments that are the happiest times, and as we go through the deepest sorrows, the most significant challenges, well, we're not simply applying historic teaching and ideas of an inspirational leader. No, we experience and grapple with those things as the living and risen Jesus walks through them with us. And that can give us the most wonderful peace and the sweetest comfort. Jesus is alive today. If you're one of his people, he walks with you today. He lives in you today. That's deeply personal. He knows us better than anyone else knows us. We can't surprise him. He is present with us continually, every moment, every day. And that transforms the way that we relate to him, the way we speak to him in prayer, perhaps. And the way that he speaks to us through his word. It is exciting and enough to make our hearts burn within us because he is alive. If you are not a Christian, you want to know more of this, do come and speak to me afterwards. I'd be delighted to chat to you after the service. But we're going to sing again another song that helps us to pick up on these consequences, these implications of the resurrection. The living Jesus who lives in and with his people. Enjoy this next song as we stand and sing together. And then we're going to share communion together afterwards.